Blog Talk Radio.
Into this room at your own risk, because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. This is not a new world. It is simply an extension of what began in the old one. It has patterned itself after every dictator who has ever planted the ripping imprint of a boot on the pages of history since the beginning of time. It has refinements, technological advances, and a more sophisticated approach the destruction of human freedom. But like every one of the superstates that preceded it, it has one iron rule. Logic is an enemy and truth is a menace.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silent, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed.
I appeared before the Congressional Committee to tell what I knew of activities, which I believe might lead to an attempt to set up a fascist dictatorship.
A part of that plan, of course, is to induce the gradual surrender of American sovereignty, piece by piece and step by step, to various international organizations, of which the United Nations is the outstanding but far from the only example. The consequent willingness of the American people to allow the steps of appeasement by our government, which amount to a piecemeal surrender of the rest of the free world and of the United States itself.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN standards.
I had planned another closing message, but I feel compelled to say what I'm about to say. Now, I risk sounding like a conspiracy theorist, but it's no longer a theory. What I'm about to say is fact. The secret organizations of the world power elite are no longer secret. They have planned and are now leading us into a one-world communist government.
On the outskirts of the national capital today, black limousines with darkened windows converge on a hotel where private security guards impose ironclad control. The limos carry royalty, political power brokers, and industrial titans to a secret meeting that will last all weekend. It's known as the Bilderberg Group. Could their objective be world domination?
Money from our treasury is now being spent for this effort. We will have a new currency and a new constitution modeled on the Soviet Union's constitution. Our rights will not be inalienable, but they will be granted by government who can also take them away. This is terrorism of the most worst kind, brought on you by our own government. The strongest, freest nation in the history of mankind will be averaged into world communism.
There is a very real prospect of a new world order. It is a big idea. A new world order.
A new world is emerging. It is a new world order.
The new world order is emerging.
A new world order can be created.
A new world order.
The new world order.
New world order.
A new world order.
The new world order.
New world order.
New world order.
New world order.
A new world order.
And the hope
that each of us has to build a new world order.
Движение в другом направлении, к новому мировому порядку.
I think even that, does not describe why the world has changed so much and why the world has turned so much towards a new world order and a new kind of civilization.
France intends to pursue together with all people of goodwill around the world this battle to build a new world order of the 21st century.
It's about defeat of Europe and a new world order.
A new world order.
The new world order.
New world order.
A new international order.
New global order.
President Obama and British Prime Minister Gordon today calling for a new world order.
Is this some sort of a new world order which Gordon Brown kind of alluded to?
God is setting up a new world order. And his plan includes you.
In an era of globalization, of political interdependence, where the world is ever more swiftly opening up, and the cliche about a global community becomes an economic, political, often social reality. In this new world,
British Prime Minister Brown today declared a new world order is emerging. We want to know what you think, so our poll question is, Are you excited that a new world order is emerging, or are you concerned about America's sovereignty?
What is this new world order all about? It is about a reversal of the American Revolution. American Revolution was a bunch of farm kids and can't get them working in blacksmith shops and working at other jobs, standing up to the greatest army on earth in places like Lexington and Concord, and saying to the whole world that forever, no matter what happens, we Americans will decide here and decide for ourselves our own destiny. The new world order is the reversal, the overturning of that revolution. That's what the end goal is. America's a rich province, part of their new world order. But I give you my word, if ever I stand up on that east wing of the Capitol and take my oath as President of the United States, when my hand goes up, their new world order comes crashing down.
In the near future, Earth is dominated by a powerful world government. Once free nations are slaves to the will of a tiny elite, the dawn of a new dark age is upon mankind. Countries are a thing of the past. Every form of independence is under attack, with the family and even the individual itself nearing extinction. Close to 80% of the Earth's population has been eliminated. The remnants of a once free humanity are forced to live within highly controlled, compact, prison-like cities. Travel is highly restricted. Superhighways connect the megacities and keep the population from entering into unauthorized zones. No human activity is private. AI supercomputers chronicle and categorize every action. A prison planet dominated by a ruthless gang of control freaks whose power can never be challenged. This is the vision of the global elite, their goal. A program of total dehumanization, where the science of tyranny is law. A worldwide control grid, designed to ensure the overlord's monopoly of power forever. Our species will be condemned to this nightmare future unless the masses are awakened to the New World Order master plan and mobilized to defeat it. Erected by a secretive group, the Georgia Guidestones are a testament to the elite's plan for a world religion, global laws, with a global court and army to enforce it. And set in stone, it is written that the population never rise above 500 million. In this film, you will learn how our world is truly governed. You will see how highly secretive roundtable groups interlock to form a global intelligence network. This group has been steering planetary affairs for hundreds of years. Now in the final stage, they prepare for open world government. A goal tyrants throughout history have lusted after.
The concept of the New World Order has been around for centuries. It's been receiving tremendous play over the last half of the 20th century. George Bush, the first senior president, George Bush, used it a lot in his speeches and really implies that he really wants to see a order in which we have a universal or a global type of governance in which every human being on planet Earth is ultimately responsible for policies that are being formulated at the international level.
It is a big idea, a new world order.
It's really always the same. You go back throughout all of history, the Roman Empire, the Soviet Union, Hitler during the Nazism was always saying that it's going to create the utopia for the average person, when in fact, history always shows that it does exactly the opposite.
Conquest and empire is as old as civilization. Babylon, Egypt, and Greece. They all built empires in an attempt to rule the world. The Roman system at its peak dominated the known world. Complex governmental systems were developed to control diverse populations.
During the period between the 15th and 19th century, new empires emerged and again waged war for supremacy. The nobility, as well as the thriving merchant class, were financed by a handful of private banks. Many of the great money houses would hedge their bets and finance both sides of a war. Sophisticated intelligence gathering networks gave the financiers a clear edge over the governments they were slowly gaining control of. On the 18th of June, 1815, agents of the British arm of the Rothschild family looked on as Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte fought desperately to save his army from the jaws of a British-Prussian pincer attack. A Rothschild agent was able to get the news of Napoleon's defeat at the hands of Lord Wellington to Nathan Rothschild a full 20 hours before the news reached London. Nathan, the head of the British arm of the Rothschild family, put out the rumor to the London Stock Exchange that Napoleon had won the war. Stocks plunged by 98%, and Rothschild was then able to buy up the entire British economy for pennies on the pound. When the news of Napoleon's defeat finally arrived, stocks soared. Britain was now the undisputed ruler of Europe, and Rothschild ruled England. The already dominant British Empire grew even more aggressive. Her troops and bureaucracy spread across the globe. The sun never set on Britannia's holdings.
The banking cartel funded, in fact, since about 1800, they have funded both sides of almost every war. And, of course, they're getting the interest off of the loans that they've given the various governments and the wars that they have actually helped stimulate and create.
By 1900, Germany was a rising force and the leader of the Industrial Revolution.
World War I, for instance, there was absolutely no reason to have World War I, except that it was an ideal opportunity for the banking cartel to make a pile of money by funding both sides of that particular war.
Armaments companies financed by Rothschild-controlled banks in Germany, France, England, and Austria bankrolled all the factions. At least 20 million were killed in the war. It was a conflict so terrible the people vowed to never fight again. They dubbed it the War to End All Wars.
The question is, why did they want war? Well, first of all, it's money and power. But secondly, they wanted to create the League of Nations. They had this in their plans all along, and as a consequence, once the war was over or about to be over, they began to formulate this idea of a League of Nations so this would never, ever happen again.
Hundreds of years of practice made the British experts at hiding their empire behind puppet governments and councils. In the name of stopping all future conflicts, they proposed that countries would join a League of Nations. Their true intention was for the League to serve as a framework for world government. President Woodrow Wilson, who had spearheaded the establishment of the private Federal Reserve System in the United States in 1913, strongly supported the establishment of the League of Nations.
Woodrow Wilson was a very naive president. He was basically a college professor that was grafted into this whole system.
The League convened in Paris in 1919, but many nations recognized it as a threat to their sovereignty and refused to join. Frustrated by the U.S. Congress blocking the League of Nations, British intelligence, with the help of the Rockefeller family, set up the Council on Foreign Relations in New York City in 1921. The Council recruited the best and brightest of American life to support the growth of the Anglo-American Empire. The CFR's stated mission is to abolish all nation-states in favor of an all-powerful world government administered by a tiny elite. By 1930, the promoters of world government had split into two interlocking camps. the Fabian Socialist centered in London, and the Fascist based in Italy and Germany.
National Socialism will use its own revolution for establishing a new world order. Adolf Hitler.
Supporters of the fascists in the United States and England believed that the military should be used to quickly transform the world into a new world order. All the more sophisticated practitioners of globalism stated that incrementalism was the sure path to world domination. Congressional Medal of Honor winner Major General Smedley Butler went public in 1934, exposing an attempt by the robber barons to launch a military overthrow of the United States. The war hero testified to the McCormick-Dickstein Committee in Congress that some of the most powerful men in America had tried to recruit him to lead a military coup so they could set up National Socialism in the United States.
Appeared before the Congressional Committee, the highest representation of the American people under subpoena to tell what I knew of activities, which I believe might lead to an attempt to set up a fascist dictatorship. I was supposed to lead an organization of 500,000 men, which would be able to take over the functions of government.
The fascists had also made deep inroads in England. Edward VIII, King of England, was forced to abdicate the throne because of his public support for Hitler. In the build-up to World War II, and during the conflict, the bankers again financed both sides, just as they had done with Napoleon. With the rise and fall of the Third Reich, Europe lay in ruins. Once again, the elite claimed that only global governance could save humanity from certain destruction. And this time, the elite would succeed in setting up their world body. In April of 1945, at the Presidio Naval Base in San Francisco, the United Nations was founded by the victors of World War II. The United Nations complex was then built in New York City on land donated by John D. Rockefeller. Shortly after the elite established the United Nations.
When you have a dream, it doesn't often come at you screaming in your face. Dreams always come from behind you, not right between your eyes. It sneaks up on you. Sometimes a dream almost whispers. Whispers, it never shouts. Very hard to hear. So you have to, every day of your lives, be ready to hear what whispers in your ear. It very rarely shouts.
That moment in time was one of the darkest moments I've had in my whole life. My motivation was out the door, like I just wanted to give up.
I need you to be who you're supposed to be. Don't let nobody stop you from being who you're supposed to be. Don't nobody out-talk you. Don't let nobody tell you the doors are shut. Don't let nobody tell you that opportunities don't exist. Don't let nobody tell you that. I need you to be who you're supposed to be, because when you are who you're supposed to be, you're superhuman.
I don't want to delude you, because this is a career-ending injury.
Listen to me. You got fear and you got faith, and I've decided not to walk in fear, but to walk in faith. There's greatness in you. Are you hearing me? There's greatness in you. And you mean to tell me you're never going to reach your full potential? You mean to tell me you're never going to be what you've been called to be? That you're not going to do what you've been called to do because you are afraid? Some things don't come. They just not going to come to you because you want it as bad as you want to breathe. You got to put up the dupe, and you got to be willing to fight that thing out. They're not giving out success, but you can earn it. You can take it. I need you to take it. Don't let the distractions distract you.
I would have never started skateboarding.
So whatever you do, man, don't give up. Don't quit. Now listen to me closely. Just because you fail doesn't make you a failure. And when life hits you, you got to keep going. Just don't quit.
In order to achieve greatness, you have to go through a lot of pain. You definitely have setbacks, but in order to achieve that success, you have to push through.
If you hit an oak tree 1,000 times in 1,000 different spots, what's going to happen? Absolutely nothing. But if you hit an oak tree 1,000 times in the exact same spot, you know what's going to happen? You're going to bring it down. You're going to do the impossible. You're not only a special person created at a special time, you got something special inside of you.
You have to believe that you can do something that nobody else has done. And somehow that concept has to become reality.
You got greatness all inside of you, but your problem is you a scaredy cat. You soft, and every time it get hard, you quit and you give up. And I'm telling you, if you would be willing to fight your way through it, if you would be willing to fight your way through this battle, fight your way through cancer, fight your way through that academic struggle, fight your way through divorce, fight your way through it. If it was easy, everybody would do it. You gotta fight your way through it. You gotta fight the fear, because guess what? Fear ain't bigger than you. If you're gonna win the fight of your life, you can't be afraid to fight.
What exactly was hurting on your body?
I think my foot's broken and my shoulder and my back. Everything feels pretty broke right now. The doctor tried to get me to not skate, and I basically told him he's going to have to fight me.
Are you going to be able to take your fourth and fifth run?
I'm taking every run.
How are you able to muster up the strength to even come back out here and then take another run?
I don't know what it is that's inside me, but it's... there's a lot of determination. It's a fire that just keeps burning.
Fear, you are not going to stop me. I got too far. I've come too far to give up now.
If tomorrow wasn't promised, what would you give for today? Forget everything else. Forget that there was any sunlight left. What would you spend today thinking about? Yourself or the man that's inside you? We get one opportunity in life.
What if the job you have is the only job you get this year? What if the relationship you're in, what if that's the only relationship you get this year? What if what you have is all you get and you don't get no more? What if they're not giving out more than what we're going to do?
How many of you know that if you had your life to live over again, you could do more than what you've done? That proves the point that what we do and what we accomplish in life is only a tip of the iceberg of what's possible for us.
Based on all the evidence we have, we estimate you have 30 days left.
I refuse to die an unlived life. If you die this very moment, what will die with you? What dreams? What ideas? What talent? What leadership potential? What greatness that you showed up to bring? That you allowed fear or procrastination to hold you back? Only to realize that you've never lived. Only to realize that you've never scraped the surface of your potential.
It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad.
See, most people stop short of their dreams because of the rejections of life. You will always be rejected.
I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Whatever legacy you're going to leave, leave your legacy. Wins and losses come a dime a dozen. But effort, nobody can judge effort.
Every time someone says no, that brings you another step to a yes. You're getting closer. Trust me, you will win if you don't quit.
So that team that think they're ready to see you, they think what they've seen on film, they ain't done what feels so. Because every day is a new day. Every moment is a new moment. So now you got to go out and show them that I'm a different creature. Now!
For free for the win!
Yes!
LeBron James!
Tonight, if kids will sleep with your rifle, you will give your rifle a girl's name. Because this is the only pussy you people are going to get. Your days of finger-banging old Mary Jane Rottencrotch through her pretty pink panties are over. You're married to this piece, this weapon of iron and wood, and you will be faithful.
All right, everybody, Joseph Gibson here, podcasting live, understanding the times which we live today. It's an information war out there. It definitely is, so I'm just trying to prove that point right there. I don't have any callers that really want to share anything tonight. Phone number 657-383-0616. So I see a couple people in the chat room that usually I see Koskoff in there. He's always got something smart to say, and whoever he is hiding behind his fake phony profile name. Just playing some intros here tonight, and if anybody has something, like I said, to say, all they had to do is call in 657-383-0616. Saturday night we did a podcast similar to this one, and that's probably the format we're probably going to be doing pretty much, because pretty much everything has been said. There's really nothing more to say about a lot of the things that are going on. I mean, unless you want to bring up a new topic and you can show me where you've achieved any type of success, because the game is rigged. It's a big club, and you're not in it. And, you know, until people really realize that, you know, and start realizing what their self-value is worth and start going against this machine here that they've got going that's there to keep you down and out. And every time, you know, I mean, it's a telemarketers, for instance. Just one example. We talked about those, I think it was about last week. You know, and there's nothing you could do about it. Nothing. Even though they violate the law, they harass you, there's nothing you do about it. We call politicians on this show. We've done it in previous years. Nothing. What are you going to do about it? It takes mass numbers. If you listen to the show Saturday night that we did here, we had a caller call in and actually broke it down pretty much for the last 30 minutes of the show, that everything about what's happening and why it's happening and what has really happened and how you go about fixing it. And it was a different aspect. It's something that's never been said on this podcast before. That's what this gentleman did. So that was Saturday night's podcast. It was a very interesting conversation I had with this gentleman. Of course, I'm going to try to bring him back on here in the future. And, of course, Bert, he queued in too. You know, he's skeptical like I am about, you know, people rising up and, you know, basically achieving what we're supposed to be achieving here. We're supposed to all have life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And do you have that today? Are you able to do that unregulated The government's not supposed to be regulating every aspect of your life. It's not supposed to. It's supposed to be out of our lives, and we're supposed to have allow free will and free entrepreneurship. If you were to open up a small business today, you know how many hurdles you'd have to jump through and ropes you'd have. Well, that's a good thing, people say. Well, it's a good thing for regulation. I mean, really, it's not. The ends never justify the means. When you think about, well, what about that trucker who's hauling that gasoline down the highway? Don't you want that truck to be inspected and whatnot? Look, you can't police everybody. Yeah, I do want to inspect it, but I don't want people out there drawing revenue, because the problem is that you have revenue drawers and you have greed. And greed will breed corruption, and with corruption breeds control. And that's just what you get then. That's what type of system you have right now. And people need to understand that. And they don't understand that, and you're just not going to get anywhere in this system. I mean, it's just look, we called Amazon on this show, if you remember. Still, that battle continues to this day. And you call them, and nobody can answer your questions. What, am I going to do that for you again? No. Why bother? Go back and listen to that show, because nobody cares really. As long as you're okay and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, and you got your little. Life, and you're in a little bubble, then you're okay.
Deposit Photos Music.
And if anybody wants to protest what we do or violate what we want, we just turn off the chip.
That's right, microchips. In 2005, Congress, under the pretense of immigration control and the so-called war on terrorism, passed the Real ID Act, under which it is projected by May 2008, you will be required to carry around a federal identification card, which includes on it a scannable barcode with your personal information. However, this barcode is only an intermediary step before the card is equipped with a VeriChip RFID tracking module.
We've all got two wolves in us, a good one and a bad one, and they both want to eat. The best I can tell, we just got to feed that good one a little more than the other one. Happiness is an emotional response to an outcome. If I win, I will be happy. If I don't, I won't. It's an if-then, cause-and-effect, quid pro quo standard that we cannot sustain, because we immediately raise it every time we attain it. You see, happiness demands a certain outcome. It is result reliant. And I say, if happiness is what you're after, then you're going to be let down frequently, and you're going to be unhappy much of your time. Joy, though, joy is a different thing. It's something else. Joy is not a choice. It's not a response to some result. It's a constant. Joy is the feeling that we have from doing what we are fashioned to do, no matter the outcome. Now, personally, as an actor, I started enjoying my work and literally being more happy when I stopped trying to make the daily labor a means to a certain end. For example, I need this film to be a box office success. You know, I need my performance to be acknowledged. I need the respect of my peers. All those are reasonable aspirations, but the truth is, as soon as the work, the daily making of the movie, the doing of the deed became the reward in itself for me, I got more box office, more accolades and respect than I ever had before. See, joy is always in process. It's under construction. It is in constant approach, alive and well in the doing of what we're fashioned to do and enjoying it. Now, the easiest way to dissect success is through gratitude, giving thanks for that which we do have, for what is working, appreciating the simple things we sometimes take for granted. We give thanks for these things, and that gratitude reciprocates, creating more to be thankful for. It's really simple, and it works. Now, I'm not saying be in denial of your failures. No. We can learn from them too, but only if we look at them constructively as a means to reveal what we are good at, what we can get better at, what we do succeed at. All right, life's a verb. We try our best. We don't always do our best. And since we are the architects of our own lives, let's study the habits, the practices, the routines that we have that lead to and feed our success, our joy, our honest pain, our laughter, our earned tears. Let's dissect that and give thanks for those things. And when we do that, guess what happens? We get better at them. And we have more to dissect. It's a get-rich-quick on the internet, riches, 15 minutes of fame world that we live in, and we see it every day. But we all want to succeed, right? So the question that we've got to ask ourselves is what success is to us? What success is to you? Is it more money? That's fine. I got nothing against money. Maybe it's a healthy family. Maybe it's a happy marriage. Maybe it's to help others, to be famous, to be spiritually sound, to leave the world a little bit better place than you found it. Continue to ask yourself that question. Now, your answer may change over time, and that's fine. But do yourself this favor. Whatever your answer is, don't choose anything that will jeopardize your soul. Prioritize who you are, who you want to be, and don't spend time with anything that antagonizes your character. Don't drink the Kool-Aid, man. It tastes sweet, but you will get cavities tomorrow. All right? Life is not a popularity contest. Be brave, take the hill, but first answer that question, what's my hill? Well, for me, it's a measurement of five things. We got fatherhood. We got being a good husband. We got my health, mind, body, and spirit. We got career, and we got friendships. These are what's important to me in my life right now. Because I want to keep all five in healthy shape. And I know that if I don't take care of them, if I don't keep up maintenance on them, one of them is going to get weak, man. It's going to dip too deep into the debit section. It's going to go bankrupt. It's going to get sick. Die even. So first, we have to define success for ourselves. And then we have to put in the work to maintain it. Take that daily tally. Tend our garden. Keep the things that are important to us in good shape. Defining ourselves by what we are not is the first step that leads us to really knowing who we are. You know that group of friends that you hang out with that they really might not bring out the best in you? You know, they gossip too much or they're kind of shady. They really aren't going to be there for you in a pinch. Or how about that bar that we keep going to that we always seem to have the worst hangover from? Or that computer screen, right? That computer screen that keeps giving us an excuse not to get out of the house and engage with the world and get some real human interaction. Or how about that food that we keep eating, the stuff that tastes so good going down, makes us feel like crap the next week, when we feel lethargic and we keep putting on weight? Well, those people, those places, those things, stop giving them your time and energy. Just don't go there. I mean, put them down. And when you do this, when you do put them down, when you quit going there, and you quit giving them your time, you inadvertently find yourself spending more time and in more places that are healthy for you, that bring you more joy. Why? Because you just eliminated the who's, the where's, the what's, and the when's that were keeping you from your identity. Look, trust me, too many options, I promise you this, too many options will make a tyrant of us all. All right, so get rid of the excess, the wasted time. Decrease your options. And if you do this, you will have accidentally, almost innocently, put in front of you what is important to you by process of elimination. Knowing who we are is hard. It's hard. So give yourself a break. Eliminate who you are not first, and you're going to find yourself where you need to be. Make voluntary obligations. I'm talking about the ones that we make with ourselves, with our God, with our own consciousness. I'm talking about the you versus you obligations. We have to have them. Now, again, these are not societal laws and expectations that we acknowledge and endow for anyone other than ourselves. These are faith-based obligations that we make on our own. These are not the lowered insurance rates for a good driving record. You will not be fined or put in jail if you do not gratify these obligations I speak of. No one else governs these but you. They are your secrets with yourself, your own private counsel. personal protocols. And while nobody throws you a party when you abide by them, no one's going to arrest you when you break them either, except yourself. An honest man's pillow is his peace of mind. And when you lay down on that pillow at night, no matter who's in your bed, we all sleep alone. These are your personal Jiminy Crickets, and there are not enough cops in the entire world to police them. It's on you. It's on you. We do our best when our destinations are beyond the measurement, when our reach continually exceeds our grasp, and when we have immortal finish lines. And when we do this, the race is never over. The journey has no port. The adventure never ends because we are always on the way. So do this. Do this and let them, let somebody else come up and tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, you scored. Let them run up and tap you on the shoulder and say, man, you won. Let them come tell you, you can go home now. Let them say, I love you too. Let them say, thank you. Take the lid off the man-made roofs that we put above ourselves and always play like an underdog.
When you have a dream, it doesn't often come at you screaming in your face. Dreams always come from behind you, not right between your eyes. It sneaks up on you. Sometimes a dream almost whispers. Whispers, it never shouts. Very hard to hear. So you have to, every day of your lives, be ready to hear what whispers in your ear. It very rarely shouts.
That moment in time was one of the darkest moments I've had in my whole life. My motivation was out the door, like I just wanted to give up.
I need you to be who you're supposed to be. Don't let nobody stop you from being who you're supposed to be. Don't let nobody out-talk you. Don't let nobody tell you the doors are shut. Don't let nobody tell you that opportunities don't exist. Don't let nobody tell you that. I need you to be who you're supposed to be, because when you are who you're supposed to be, you're superhuman.
I don't want to delude you because this is a career-ending injury.
Listen to me. You got fear and you got faith.
Let's talk to Will in Arizona. Thanks for holding her on the air.
First off, I am a Prison TV Planet member.
Awesome, brother. Go ahead and into your points, and I'll hold you over if need be.
If you really want to have an unabridged idea of what is going on today, look at, it's actually a YouTube video, but it's a documentary, Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. He actually kicked out a lot of the bankers because they were trying to implode Germany after World War I. And it was the bankers. And when I was watching that, it was 5 hours long. And I started listening and saying to myself, wait a minute, they are just repeating history. But because we are so dumbed down in the sense of our historical knowledge.
Laura, I haven't seen the documentary you're talking about. People can, I guess, check it out for themselves.
In the very well-made, excellent and moving documentary called Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. I want you to do something for me as well, and I would really appreciate it. Before you listen to this interview, I want you to watch the documentary. I know you want to listen to this program right away, but if you haven't already seen it, I want you to stop this program right now and go watch the documentary first. And I'm adamant about watching the documentary because one of the biggest hurdles that the majority of people seem to have, they're basically just kind of set in their ways, and they argue that they already know everything that they need to know concerning this topic. Well, I can promise you, people, you don't know one-tenth of it.
I seriously had a panic attack after I watched that documentary, The Greatest Story Never Told. And for days afterward, I was really shook up. It had such a profound impact on me, and everything started making so much sense, and I felt so... I mean, I've always felt kind of betrayed by the powers that be, but I felt more betrayed than ever. Mm-hmm. And I started looking back on my entire life and looking back at all the movies that I'd seen.
I just couldn't believe it. I thought if they could pull off this, then anything is possible. Anything.
Yeah.
You know, and that one, you know, I would encourage anybody watching this or listening to this to watch that hasn't seen that documentary to watch it.
Go back with an open mind
and listen to that interview that you did with Dennis Wise recently.
But that's most likely what got us censored from iTunes, by the way, too, that show.
Well, that
shows what we're not allowed to talk about. It's just off limits, you know.
And that's what, when I was going through that sort of panic attack realization, that was it. That was the big red flag. I was like, oh my god, like of course we're not being told the truth, because we're not allowed to talk about this issue. When you're not allowed to talk about something, then that's like the red flag right there. If it's off limits, then that's the thing you need to talk about the most.
And the rule to remember is that history is written by the winner.
I can promise you, people, you don't know one-tenth of it.
How tall are you, Private?
Sir, 5'9", sir!
5'9"? I didn't know they stacked shit that high. You trying to squeeze an inch in on me somewhere, huh?
Sir, no, sir!
Bullshit, it looks to me like the best part of you ran down the crack of your mama's ass and ended up as a brown stain on the mattress. I think you've been cheated.
Where in hell are you from anyway, Private?
Sir, Texas, sir!
Holy dog shit, Texas, only steers and queers come from Texas, Private Cowboy. And you don't much look like a steer to me, so that kind of narrows it down. Do you suck dicks?
Sir, no, sir!
Are you a Peter Pepper?
Sir, no, sir!
I bet you're the kind of guy that would fuck a person in the ass and not even have the goddamn common courtesy to give him a reach around. I'll be watching you.
This is no fantasy, no careless product of wild imagination.
No, my good friends, these indictments I've brought you today, specific charges listed herein against the individuals, their acts of treason, their ultimate aim of sedition. These are matters of undeniable fact. I ask you now to pronounce judgment on those accused. On this mindless aberration, whose only means of expression are wanton violence and destruction. Once trusted by this council, charged with maintaining the defense of the planet itself, chief architect of this intended revolution and author of this insidious plot to establish a new order amongst us, with himself as absolute ruler. You have heard the evidence. The decision of the council will now be heard.
Guilty. 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 Guilty.
No weapons of mass destruction were found.
Are you kidding me? Do you buy that? There were.
I was 5 and he was 6. We rode on horses made of sticks. He wore black and I wore white.
Come on, let us shoot. Claire. Bang, bang,
bang, bang. Hey, I need to get the brass to drop ramps. I got a wounded girl. We need to take the rest of mine.
Oh, it's their fault for bringing their kids to a battle.
That's right.
The main reason we went into Iraq at the time was we thought he had weapons of mass destruction. It turns out he didn't, but he had the capacity to make weapons of mass destruction. But I also talked about the human suffering in Iraq.
Hello, boys and girls. I have a special message for you from the President of the United States. I salute the boys and girls who are buying United States savings stamps and bonds, and they're giving important support to the cause of freedom and the men who fight for us in Vietnam.
Congress gave us this authority in August 1964 to do whatever may be necessary. That's pretty far-reaching. That's the sky's the limit.
As an American citizen, you have to respect our president, whether I like it or not. It's really not my decision, but I do respect my president, and I will support whatever decision he makes.
Music played and people sang. Just for me, the church bells rang.
It is a hard fact that U.S. strikes have resulted in civilian casualties.
Now he's gone, I don't know why. And till this day, sometimes I cry. He didn't even say goodbye, he didn't take the time to lie.
The United States knows that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction.
One of the first things they told me was, you're not even to acknowledge the drone program. You're not even to discuss that it exists.
Renewed hostile actions against United States ships on the high seas in the Gulf of Tonkin have today required me to order the military forces of the United States to take action in reply. That reply is being given.
Crashing through the lies.
All you ever hear about in this country is our differences. That's all the media and the politicians are ever talking about, the things that separate us, things that make us different from one another. That's the way the ruling class operates in any society. They try to divide the rest of the people. They keep the lower and the middle classes fighting with each other so that they, the rich, can run off with all the fucking money. Fairly simple thing happens to work. You know, anything different, that's what they're going to talk about. Race, religion, ethnic and national background, jobs, income, education, social status, sexuality, anything you can do, keep us fighting with each other so that they can keep going to the bank. You know how I describe the economic and social classes in this country? The upper class keeps all of the money, pays none of the taxes. The middle class pays all of the taxes, does all of the work. The poor are there just to scare the shit out of the middle class. Keep them showing up at those jobs.
They're all the same. I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up.
Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
I had this feeling, man, because you know there's a handful of people actually run everything. That's true. It's provable. It's not a fuck. I'm not a conspiracy nut. It's provable. Handful, very small elite run and own these corporations, which include the mainstream media. I had this feeling who's ever elected president, like Clinton was, no matter what the promises you promise on the campaign trail, blah, 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 when you win, you go into this smoky room with the 12 industrialists, capitalist scumfucks who got you in there, and you're in this smoky room and this little screen comes down and a big guy in a cigar rolled a film, and it's a shot of the Kennedy assassination from an angle you've never seen before
that looks suspiciously off the grassy knoll,
and then the film, the screen goes up and the lights come up and they go to the new president. Any questions? Just what my agenda is. First we bomb Baghdad. You got it.
Anyway, I want to say thank you to our friends there. Real quick, I'm going to read the prologue. This is from Battle for the Republic, Dance of Swords. So when and how would it start? Everyone knew that the conflict was at hand and that the open battle for the Republic was about to begin. The Dagger War had been raging for many, many years, with victories and defeats on both sides. Some had thought that Waco would be the boiling point, but it had not gone as any had foreseen. The 90s had had its skirmishes, and the militias had performed well, but restrained themselves in the hope that some other solution would present itself. It had not. With each passing day, the pressure continued to build. The globalist agenda had been based upon lies, and the people knew it. Some were still trying to formulate a peaceful solution, but the system had its own plan, and treachery was the centerpiece of that plan. With the first blade drawn and blood spilled, there would be no turning back. In a time of its own choosing, and at a place no one had expected, the Dance of Swords would begin. That's a nice abbreviated way to explain to you. When people ask me, I've had this happen, well, how do you think it's going to start? That is the whenever I'm in private, you know, conversation with people, and y'all, a lot of you listening know this because I've spoken with you. The first concern is, how will it start? Well, let me walk you through it, because it's going to happen this way, and really we don't get to pick the location, but the goofs are going to pick somebody they want to attack. It's that simple. They're going to try, and most likely, although you never know with, like I said, we're on a sliding scale, but let's just stay between 60 and 90 days into the next year. The bat faggots combined with whatever homeland security bottom feeders, mostly mercenaries, are going to pick somebody that they're going to decide they want to use as an example. That action is going to be a face-off, and it's going to actually, you know, initially be casualties for those who are surprised. It's going to happen that way. They're going to get caught off guard a little bit, but not much, because everybody can sense it, feel it, taste it, touch it. And what's going to happen is people are going to call on others, and there's a lot of people who are going to mobilize. The other side's going to do the same thing. Oh, and they have all their technology, but trust me, we're pulling out all the stops, and we have all of ours. At some point, there's going to be a column of goofs in black uniforms, idiots, mostly pea brains. In fact, well, 99.9% pea brains in their spiffy little black uniforms with all their spiffy little alphabet letters on them. And that column of Suburbans and Labs and others, other nonsense are going to face off at an intersection. They're going to bump into each other by accident, mostly. And it'll be a column of militia, mechanized or light mechanized and armed up, already cock-locked and ready to rock and roll. And the bottom feeders in the black uniforms will be screaming their profanities, and they'll be screaming and screaming and screaming, and the other side won't be screaming a whole lot. And somebody's going to pull the trigger, and there's going to be one hell of a popcorn exchange. It's going to, from a distance, it's going to sound like somebody opened up the popcorn pan from hell, okay? And when it's all said and done, there will be no turning back. I want you all to be ready for that. Notice I didn't shout about it. I didn't scream about it. And there's none of us that are in the militia community that will be surprised by it. There are none of you in the Patriot effort that should be surprised at it at all. Now, some will try to talk themselves out of it, and some will think they can make a deal. There are no deals with the devil. And when that happens, then all of the game plans, all of the nonsense the enemy's thought to plug in will be for naught. And then the sky's the limit. Because one of the things that everybody has learned by watching what has happened over the years is in this game, it's going to be use it or lose it. In other words, you make contact, you fire their hind end up, and you turn them into puddles of mush. You don't try to talk with them. You don't try to negotiate with them. You do what you have done before. Now, some of you are older gentlemen who were in World War II, and I know you can't dance the dance the way we could, you know, in the past. I know that. But by God, you can still run a radio, and you know you can still drive a truck, or you can at least help with men that are wounded or individuals that are hurt when the time comes and help to maintain the fabric of our society. But there's another group of veterans, the Korean War veterans, and guys, you're getting long in the tooth, too. You don't need to tell me. I know we got a lot of gentlemen in their 70s. And you know what? They're still online. And when the time comes, I don't care if you move fast. You pick the target, you put them down like the dog that they are with one round, and if all you did was take down that one black uniformed scumbag, you know what? That's one less we got to worry about. You pick the time, you pick the place, you neutralize the target. But there's a whole bunch of Vietnam vets, and there's a whole bunch of other people that are from other wars and other periods of time in the last 40 years, and you are more than competent, and you are more than capable, and you've seen men die, and you've seen men stacked like cordwood, okay? The other side, they always claim, and we got a bunch of goofs on our side that are doing the, they're just stacked like cordwood. And next time someone says that, you turn and slap that sucker. Slap that girl for what he is. Okay, the next time you hear any goof come up with that or start yapping that BS, then you slap his hind end. Because everybody knows it's equal opportunity dying time once everything kicks in, and the other side ain't going to have it their way. Now, you're going to have to think ahead. Now, I'm going to tell you flat out, anybody who's running around like a chicken with their head cut off, shame on you. I don't want to hear any screaming. There shouldn't be any panic. I don't want to hear any, it's so terrible. I don't want to hear any of that either. Congratulations. It's the life we're living. It's the times we have. Make the best of them you can, organize to the best of your ability, fight to win, and once we've won, help the other guys that are still in need of assistance to kick the slats off the other ones that they're facing. Moose season is going to be real short. However, there's going to be a couple of seasons that open up, and there's a reason for that, because the bad guys are hoping to waste our time and resources in lesser actions that they might consume and eat out our substance. We have fought for the long term. Now, all of you out there, every one of you, must be prepared at least to take care of yourselves. You completely change the formula of what you're facing, and the enemy cannot predict effectively what they're going to do if everybody just does some of the basic stuff that we've talked about. Just food, any quantity of food and water you have on the shelf means that you are thinking with your mind and not with your stomach.
Yep.
Every one of you, all you could do is say, oh, peace, love, dope, I just can't touch a weapon. Well, fine. I really wouldn't have a problem with that, provided you get up off your dead hind end and do something to prepare yourself. At least prepare yourself. You know, in other words, get ready for what's coming. Now, that means food, that means water, water purification systems, and even if you don't think you're going to be a combatant, by God, you better get a gas mask, and you better do it now. Because they're already bragging about how they're going to bug spray people, okay? We already known that. That's part of their psychological formula. But what happens if we undermine it completely by being prepared for it? Changes the dynamic, just like everything else.
All right, everybody. Joseph Podcasting here, Understanding the Times in Which We Live Today. A bunch of intros there we played. Phone number is 657-383-0616. Of course, we don't want the usual suspects on there. I'm going to call a few people here out here tonight, maybe, and demonstrate how, I guess, dumbed down we really are. I guess I can try a couple places here. If I can get to reach anybody, I don't know, this late. I'm trying California numbers, so we'll see what happens. But after this 30-second clip here, then I'll line up the first call. Well, there it goes, my 30-second clip. There we go, there it is.
Tonight, your kids will sleep with your rifle. You will give your rifle a girl's name. Because this is the only pussy you people are going to get. Your days of finger-banging old Mary Jane Rottencrotch through her pretty pink panties are over. You're married to this piece, this weapon of iron and wood, and you will be faithful.
All right, buddy, let's try this. Let's try. We're going to see if we can get a hold of anybody here at this place here. I got a couple questions to ask them.
For more information about COVID-19 vaccine, press 1.
Uh-oh.
For local Walmart store main menu, press 2.
Oh, they switched it up on me.
For more information about COVID-19 vaccine, press 1. For local Walmart store main menu, press 2.
Uh-oh. We might have got jammed up here.
Thank you for calling your local Walmart. We appreciate your business and look forward to the opportunity to serve you in our stores.
Our associates are working every day to offer you a pleasant and safe shopping experience. Most of our stores are now open from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. Please check your store page at walmart.com for more details on local store hours. We look forward to seeing you soon.
For pharmacy, press 1. For electronics, press 2. For pickup, press 3. For deli, press 4. To speak with an associate, press 0. To repeat this menu, press star.
You always play it twice.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
For pharmacy, press 1. For electronics, press 2. For pickup, press 3. For deli, press 4. To speak with an associate, press 0. To repeat this menu, press star.
I can get somebody now.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Busy. on, answer the phone. Goodness gracious. Oh, my Lord. Okay, we'll just put him on hold. Put him on hold. All right, put him on hold. All right, let's see. Let's try this one.
Thank you for calling about Cox Cable Online.
To order new service, press 1. If you're a current customer or have recently placed an order, press 2. If you're interested in finding out about current...
I thought I got connected there.
To order new service, press 1. If you're a current customer or have recently...
This is your global corporations right here. You can't get a hold of anybody. Look at this. They don't even answer the phone. They don't even care. There we go. Let's try this one back.
Current customer or have recently placed an order.
This one's still going
press
on.
Press 2.
I got three
if
of them on the line right
If you're interested in finding
now.
Out about current promotions in your area,
but you press
1.
It only takes you back to the main menu if everyone ever noticed that. I like to speak into the ones. Then they just hang up on you. We'll see if this one's still ringing. Hello? Yeah, that one's still ringing. Unreal. And how are we supposed to fix anything in this republic? How are we supposed to? You can't get 10 people to meet for a freaking donuts at Burger King, you know, anywhere across this country. How are you supposed to restore anything? I don't think you can. I mean, like I said, you know, you got California. They're doing away with math now. California, they're not going to teach mathematics anymore in the public schools. Amazing. I mean, and why isn't that like on the front page of every single newspaper in the entire country right now? It's not, and it won't be, because nobody's going to pay attention. Nobody's going to care. And that's just the way it is. And that's just, I mean, if I was to open up the phone lines right now, you know how many crank callers I'd get? How many jerks I'd get calling in that would just have something stupid to say, that would have nothing to say at all of any type of productivity whatsoever? I'd have to go back and try to edit the episode, which I don't do anyway because I don't have time. So I put it up there. And, you know, and then people queue in and they listen to nonsense like that, you know. And I've got about 10 of them on the phone line right now. So, you know, this is what you get out there. Maybe you guys deserve the New World Order. Maybe you deserve what you're going to get. I mean, look, this is, like, for instance, this is DirecTV. This is just one of them right here. They're a scam. They're a real big scam, those ones right there, DirecTV. Oh, Lord, don't use them. You know, you can't get a hold of anybody anymore. If you call your insurance company, you call anybody, because they all got your phone, because this phone number is not connected or linked to any account, so you're not going to get anybody. But you, when you call, what happens? Your phone number is linked to an account, so therefore, after you press, jump through 18 hoops, do 18 jumping jacks, do 25 push-ups, you get connected. You know, to some customer service. I'm here to help you. I'm recording this conversation for quality training purposes. Who am I speaking to? Who do I have the pleasure of speaking to, please? And then you give me your name. Okay, can you verify your address? Can you verify the last 4 of your social, please? And you have to dance through all these hoops and give them all your personal information that you're not required to by law, but the laws are so convoluted and twisted. Look, here's one for you. I want you guys to notice this law right here. All right? Federal Reserve money. What happens if a store or a business refuses to accept cash? Say they refuse to accept cash, and that's all you have on you is cash. Say that's all you pay in cash. You don't have no credit, let's just say, hypothetically right now. Or you're making a point to just pay cash. And they say, we only accept cash. What do you do? But because if you look at your dollar bill and you reach in your wallet or your pocket right now, and what does it say? It says for all debts, public and private, right? What law governs cash? You know, the Federal Reserve notes. Does a business have to accept Federal Reserve notes? Well, there's a law created that says they do, but there's no penalty and nobody's ever challenged it. And then the states have a right to create their own monetary policy. Like for COVID, it gives them the excuse for everything. I mean, it's insane. I just don't understand it. I just don't get it. I mean, if you don't, I go in there with a $100 bill to buy gas, right, at this gas station. The lady says, I can't accept that. I says, well, what do you want me to do? I'm almost out of gas. This is all I have. You want me to go down the road and run out of gas? I mean, I live out in the country here. The next closest gas station is 15 miles away. I'm driving a Chevy 350 truck that gets 8 miles a gallon. All right? You know, so where do I go? What do? I run out of gas in the middle of the night on a dark country road because she doesn't accept Federal Reserve notes or, you know what I mean? You know, how do I pay? What do I do? You know, what do you do? I mean, so this happened to me once about 10 years ago at a gas station. And the lady wouldn't accept a $100 bill, and I was there with a worker. And I said, why? And, you know, they don't accept them. And I said, no. I said, I'm almost out of gas. I'm pulling equipment here. I said, I need gas. I said, I'm buying $50 worth of freaking gas. You know, I said, I'm giving you a $100 bill. You don't have, you know, $50. I'll buy $70 worth. She says, no, we just don't accept $100 bills. So I called the Greensboro Police Department on them. I said, look, I don't know what to do. The lady won't accept the gas. I mean, I'm going to turn on the pump myself. I'm going to get gas. This is a natural resource. This is, you know, I need this commodity. My vehicles only run on gas. I need to get home. I'm not walking. And the government says I can only use this to barter with. If I went in there with 10 pounds of coconuts or 8 apples or whatever and said, here, trade with this, that's against the law. I can't do that. I have to use Federal Reserve notes. Now, I can make a private transaction, but in that type of business establishment with their business license and all their bylaws and what they have, that which was a BP gas station, they have to, they you know, supposed to accept Federal Reserve. Most people just, okay, all right, I'll go to someplace else. They just bow down. They just bow down and say, okay, I give in, you know. They just give in. And you got to stop giving in. You got to stop on the littlest things, and that's a little issue. You're right, but that's a big issue when you in the scheme of things. Stop giving in. I will not comply, period. End of story. That's it. That's the way it's got to be. Do what's right. Do the right thing. Monetary policy. I had the law. I wanted to get the law pulled up for you, but how they accept it is a law. It's a federal. I had it up the other day, and they have to accept it as legal tender. I wish I could pull it up for you and read it to you. I can't get it for some reason. I don't know. I'm trying right now, and I'll check the phone lines if anybody wants to queue in or whatever and talk about whatever they want to talk about. You know, God only knows. You know, I mean, if you can't barter, if you have no bartering procedure, if you can't barter with money, you know, how do you barter with? How do you receive goods and services? What do you do? You know. I mean, what do you do? I mean, if you were in that situation that I was in, which I already knew they were going to do that. I was just trying to prove a point to one of my workers at the time, so he didn't believe me. I said, I'll call the cops on him. I said, I don't care. So I called the cops on him. The cop came here. He says, I've never heard nothing like this before. No argument like this. You know, he's like, I don't know what the hell is going on here. I go, well, look, what's it say on there? It says, for all debts, public and private, right? Well, I have a debt right now. I'm coming here to purchase goods and services. This is a commodity. I have to put fuel in my truck to get home. Well, she's not bartering with me with this money. You know, 80 people just walked in that store back and forth between while you and I stand out here. You're telling me she can't make change? That's a lie. You know, you should have placed a business. And if you look at the corporate bylaws, you look at the licensing board requirements of a business that's conducting transactions for goods and services, they have to have enough cash on hand to exchange, to make change. Okay? That's in some states. I don't know. In this state, it says that. I went over that with him, too. North Carolina General Statute 98, I think it's 98-123. I'm not 100% sure on that. But this is like 10 years ago, like I said. So 10, 11 years ago, actually. It could have been longer. But it's, and the cop was, he went in there and talked to the lady, and she gave in, and she, you know, he says, look, I don't know what to do. He goes, I can't arrest her. I said, I'm not asking you to arrest her. I'm asking you to keep the peace here, because I'm about ready to freaking get pissed off. And I'm, you know what I mean? I'm asking you to keep the peace. And that's what he did. He did, and she accepted the money, and I bought $60 worth of gas and made my way home. And they put a sign up on the door now, at that place, and it's still there to this day. We do not accept $100 bills because they didn't have a sign up that said it. So how was I supposed to know? You know, see, that's another business practice that they have to do. See, all these little twists, but my point of it is this. All these little laws, ordinances, codes, and statutes, over a million of them in this country right now, you could freaking use the system against them without even knowing. You know, every law conflicts with the other. I mean, that's, you know, it's just every law conflicts with each other. And you, if you're well-versed in the law, you start looking up, you start picking, like your Social Security number real quick here, your Social Security number. Do you know it's against the law for anyone to ask you for your Social Security number? It's against the law. If they ask you for it and you tell them no and they refuse you service because of that or refuse you a credit or refuse you anything, and you can look this up, if they refuse, it's a $1,000 fine if you take them to court. It's automatic. They cannot demand your Social Security number unless it's for Social Security reasons, for Social Security, all right? That's true. You can look it up. You know, I mean, the Social Security thing. How did this all start, the Social Security thing? Where, now I know how it started, the Social Security. I'm talking about how, when people started asking for this number. When I was a kid, I never heard anybody asking for my Social Security number. You know, now I think this started like around, what, 1990s, early 90s, late 80s maybe they started this crap. I don't know. You know, at least that's when I started really doing, you know, trade or whatnot. Your Social Security number to apply for this, do this. Everything's your Social Security number today. I don't know. Oh, that section. Okay, here it is right here. It's right here. The pertinent portion of the law that applies to your to this right here is the Coinage Act of 1965. Specifically, it's Section 31 U.S.C. All right? But there is no federal statute mandating that a private business or a person or organization must accept currency or coins as a form of payment, goods or services. But they must accept coins or goods or services for goods or services. They must accept Federal Reserve notes if they don't post or make known before the sale itself. So that's new. That's the first one that I got right there. I question that, actually. So what if I don't have a checking account, or if I don't have I just don't understand that. And is a cash business required to take cash? Yeah, it is. That's what somebody's asking me. The retailer is free to set the terms of payment. Yeah, that's true. They are set the terms of payment, but they have to notify you. That's why I was telling you about the sign in the window now. You know. So anyway, let me check the phone lines here. Anybody wants to talk here or just talk about anything they want to talk about, we can talk. Well, you can talk, call in 738-30616. I know the usual numbers there. I'm not going to allow on if it's a crank call. I'll try to screen them as much as possible. Let's see. Area code 203. Let's see here. I think you pressed 1. Yeah, you pressed 1. Go ahead. 203. Area code 203. Okay, 203, you don't want to talk? All right, I had 860 there, but they don't want to go. Okay, that's fine. Nobody wants to chip in here tonight and contribute. I'm sorry that I played all the intros there in the beginning. I kind of want to produce the show more or less more or less with audios now, and less of talking and taking callers. Unless a caller wants to share a particular story, then I will do that. But other just taking live callers, it's getting like getting out of control. You know, it really is. I mean, it's with the crank callers and whatnot. You know, so I mean, the usual people that do call in, they can, and I'd appreciate that. Let's see here. I got three private numbers here. One just pressed 1, so we'll see what this one brings here. I think if it's Sarge or John Doe, so I got a 2 out of 3 chance here. So let's see here. Go ahead, unmuted.
Are you going to play the lottery today, Joe?
Why?
You probably should.
That was 2 out of 3, man. That was pretty. Private callers.
Play the lottery, man. Give it a shot. Hey, look.
Yeah, three private callers, you know. Go ahead, man.
Hey, okay, man. Look, thanks for taking my call. But look, man, I was just perusing the news today, and I came across another example of another hate crime hoax. I mean, this is becoming a cottage industry in the United States. You would think if this country is as racist as these nutcase lunatic leftists keep saying, that, you know, they ought to be able to easily find real hate crimes without having to make so many up. I mean, it seems like the demand for hate crimes is exceeding the supply. I mean, I've never seen more fake hate crimes in my life. They just charged a woman for creating an account in which she sent out fake racist letters to black students at a college. They caught her.
Oh, my God.
They put her on probation. She ain't going to jail.
Oh, my good. Are you kidding me? She's got probation.
No, kid,
you can't send letters to people? Did she threaten them or anything? If she threatened them, then I could see that. But just racist letters?
She sent, well, she sent, veiled threats. I mean, she's really skirting the borderline to an actual physical threat. It's mostly, racial intimidation and, you know, saying that how she didn't like black people and this kind of thing. But it really skirts the line between an outright advocacy of a physical threat. It's really in a gray area. You could really go either way prosecutorially, I think. I wish I had one of them to read to you, but I don't. But I remember I read some of it, and that was my impression of one of the emails in the thing that I read. But the point of the matter is that the demand for hate crimes is exceeding the legitimate supply. It really is.
They're trying to do is make people mad.
Examples, so they got to literally make them up. And they're making them up in the dozens, if not the hundreds.
Yeah. I mean, well, what they're trying to do is about pitting the people against each other so that people get – they're so angry with each other because they're trying to pin the majority against the minority. And now as the minority becomes the majority – what they're doing. I got the article right here, actually. It's a Greentown woman who police say admittedly left a racist letter at the home of a family with a biracial son. Is that the one, Sarge?
Well, that's another one. No, the one I'm talking about, the woman created an email account. She was mailing out scores of emails to black students at a college, and I forget which college it was.
Well, this woman we're on this subject. Her name is Deborah Cantrell.
I mean, it's like the cottage industry these days.
Yeah, she's an old middle-aged white woman, right? Deborah Cantwell. She's a Greentown woman who police say admittedly left a racist letter at the home of a family with a biracial son, was sentenced to 180 days of unsupervised probation during a change of plea hearing in Howard County Superior Court Tuesday. As a part of the plea deal, Deborah, 63, was also ordered to attend counseling. They're making her think a different way, oh my Lord, for what was referred to as her bias. Cantwell pleaded guilty to misdemeanor charges of criminal mischief and harassment during Tuesday's hearing, and each carrying probation terms of 180 days. But since the sentence will run concurrently at the same time, Cantwell's probation period will be complete after 180 days. And then it says the sentence stems from incidents in October 2018, which the father of a 15-year-old boy contacted the Howard County Sheriff's Department deputy and stated that his family's Greentown home had been toilet papered and a racist letter was left attached to his door. Court records stated at the time. The typed letter in which Cantwell later admitted to police she was responsible for it, okay? And was left in all caps and read, "UN," well, we know what it says, the N-word, "kid is not welcome," with other details specifying her desire to have a white neighborhood. Police reports noted the 15-year-old, along with his parents, was inside the courtroom on Tuesday, and the family issued a statement to the court stating they believe Cantwell's sentence was too lenient. She should get 10 years in prison. What? I mean, what should she get? Amy Pundit, the boy's mother, told Judge Doug Tate that the family doesn't believe Cantwell is truly sorry for her actions and that hatred doesn't just go away overnight. The family also told the court that while they understand Cantwell wants unsupervised probation, she might not go to therapy on her own. So that's why. So it goes.
Man, well,
she needs more time in jail.
Yeah, Joe. Look, I am a victim of actual hate crimes when I was growing up. I literally was.
Really?
I literally got beaten by gangs of white kids because my neighborhood was integrating, and they just didn't want me there. So I know what a real hate crime is. No one has to tell me. But when I see all these fake ones coming up, that's what really, really maddens me, because the times in which I was getting beaten no longer exist today. They don't. This country has changed. They don't do that anymore for the moment.
No, they don't.
There is a much stronger case to be made that you are more likely to see it from a person of color than you are from a white person. In fact, the hate crime statistics from the Bureau of Justice Statistics and the FBI bear that out. But they,
I got one for you, Sarge. You're going to love this
man,
one.
The news media, they just uncritically, gleefully fall for it and report it as true every time without even checking it, and almost never apologizing when it turns out to be a lie.
Well, listen to this, Sarge. Listen to this one right here. This one is really weak. Charlotte woman, right? Here it is right here. A South Charlotte woman whose racist rant at two black women was filmed on video that went viral. And she was sentenced to 1 year of unsupervised probation and no jail time on Wednesday. Susan Westward was sentenced for pleading and after pleading guilty to misuse of – oh, okay, all right, I get that. All right, this one right here. She misused the 911 system and two counts of simple assault, according to the Megan Donald's spokesman. The charges and her lack of criminal record did not make Westward eligible for jail time. I guess she apparently called 911. She misused that, so right there. But they used – but so why would this be on the story of this for – it says that she used racist rant at two black women and was filmed doing so. So I got, there's a video of her doing it. It's 2 minutes and 35 seconds long.
What are they trying to say? Are they trying to say that using a bad language, which is probably protected by the First Amendment, is akin to disorderly conduct? Now, it could be, but I just want to know, are they doing that? Is that what they tried to claim? They went beyond free speech and actually constituted disorderly conduct.
I get. Well, she Westward. She was with me. She's misusing the 911 communication. I guess she made threats and simple. She's charged with threats and simple assault, but couldn't find her to serve the warrant. After she turned herself in, it doesn't go into detail on this. So I guess she. Wait a second. It says her insult against the two women at the Camden Fairview apartment complex went viral after the two women, who are sisters, posted a video of the encounter on Facebook. The video shows Westward appears to engage the other woman without provocation.
Hello?
The Charlotte Observer previously reported the two women are heard in the video asking her to leave them alone and saying, "You are harassing us," the Observer reported. But Westward continues to berate them, repeatedly asking, "Do you live here? Do you live here?" One of the women does live at the apartment complex. She also asked the women, "Do I need to bring out my concealed weapon too?" This is North Carolina, by the way. One of the African-American women called 911 and said she was being harassed. I think there's a little more to that story, Sarge. I think that's an argument that happened, and I think race was played there. You know what I mean?
Well, here's one that isn't, and achieved a great deal of fame fairly recently. Do you remember the NASCAR noose that had five FBI agents tied up investigating? Remember that one?
Was that in Connecticut?
I was in Bubba Wallace. Damn, I'm trying to remember when that one was again.
I remember that one. I remember that one you're talking about. But there's another one in Connecticut.
FBI agents tied up investigating that stupid thing.
Wow. Wow.
It was in Alabama, in Talladega.
Okay. That's
remember
insane.
That?
Yes, I remember that now. Yes.
Five FBI agents who can't be bothered to look into, Peter Strzok or James Comey or Lisa Page or Rob Robinson, whatever. You know what I'm talking about. All these people who committed all these crimes of fake Russia collusion and getting phony warrants after making attestations under oath before a FISA court. Oh, can't have FBI agents investigate. But a fake-ass noose in Talladega, they're all over it.
I know
beyond
it.
Belief.
I know it. What's up with this? I mean, so if I'm out there and I argue, well, see, this is what we have to be worried about. White people need to worry about this, Sarge, is if I have a next-door neighbor
everybody
and they're black.
Everybody needs to worry about this.
Yeah, and I don't get along with them, right? If I don't get along with them and just say, something, their kid comes over in my yard or whatever and he breaks something, and I say, hey, what the heck's wrong with you? You just broke this. All they got to say is he called me the N-word, and that's it. I go to jail for a hate crime. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter why he came over in my yard. It doesn't matter what he broke. All they got to do is say, hey, he called me the N-word, and he was arrested. I mean, I could be arrested on a whole host of charges. That's the way it's playing out right now.
Joe, I'm going to tell you right now. I am utterly, irrefutably, and absolutely opposed to hate crimes because they are selectively prosecuted. I've lost count of the number of crimes where racial epithets are used by so-called people of color, and they're clearly heard both on video and attested to by witnesses, and these liberal progressives in these liberal progressive red states say they are searching for a motive as to what motivated to determine whether or not hate crime charges should be involved, and you almost never see that hesitation the other way around. Almost never. I'm against them, period, because I think it criminalizes thought. I don't care what your thought is, as long as you don't take an action. Who cares what you're thinking? The only thing
I had a caller call in to the show. But listen to this, Sarge. I had a caller call into the show from Connecticut, state of Connecticut. I'm not going to say what town. And he had the police called because they were arguing with their neighbors across the street. When the cops came, they came with 9 cop cars because they, you know. And when the cop came inside, he says, "I want to speak to so and so." And the kid came downstairs, and he was accused of leaning out the third floor window and yelling racial slurs at the neighbors across the street. Well, guess what? He said, "I can't do that, lean out the window and yell racial slurs. I've been up on the second floor the whole time, but I'll show you the third floor." When he showed the cop the third floor window, it was all sealed off with plywood. You know, unable to do that.
Remember that guy who leaned out the window at a college dormitory and called a bunch of noisy black women below buffaloes, and he got in trouble over that?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Buffalo Soldier was a compliment for the 9th and 10th Cavalry in the late 19th century and even into the 20th century. You call the black
what
man
happened
a buffalo,
to Jesse
so you're acknowledging a well-respected military unit. I didn't know calling someone a buffalo was now a racial epithet.
Oh, yeah, Washington Redskins, they did away with that football team name. But what happened to the Jesse Smollett case? Whatever happened to that? See, that was a white person, and, you know, they wanted to find somebody so bad, but those cameras were so damning. There's no way the Chicago police could come up with anything on that.
He put white makeup on the Nigerian hoaxers, remember, that he hired? He had them put on white makeup. And then put on red hats. They had red baseball caps. Then Jay Trump now.
But what happened to it, though? I thought they were going to sue him. I thought they were going to sue him and make him pay back all that money.
Actually, it hasn't been completely dropped yet. There's lots of people trying to get reinstated, but you got to remember who the state's attorney in Cook County is. It's Kim Fox. She was in on the call from Kamala Harris's chief of staff, who tried to get the initial charges dropped against Jesse Smollett, remember?
Yes.
Remember her chief of staff tried to come in the back door and get everything eased off of Jesse.
Fox. Well, yep, yeah. And now that, that's why I'm saying nothing's going to come of it because, with Kamala in there, you know they're going to shut that down. You know what I was watching? I was watching an interesting movie with LBJ, telling the history of LBJ with the civil rights movement and whatnot, the three civil rights workers that were killed in Alabama and whatnot, and how he the civil rights movement and stuff like that. And, you know, he was, you know, and I could see how the system was back then and what I can understand Goldwater and what he was saying and whatnot, but at the same time, I mean, if you got to say, look, if the South would have won, it would not have been beneficial for the entire country as far as slavery goes. You know, I mean, it would have ended up erupting eventually into pockets of skirmishes and war.
The Confederate States ratified the 13th Amendment. I think except maybe one or two.
I know.
Almost all of them ratified the 13th Amendment. They realized they had to get rid of slavery.
I'm against slavery, but I'm just saying that the slavery issue, though, was not the main focal point of the war, and they tied it in and they melted it into there at the latter half to this way here to appease everyone else around the country because the North had its reservations. But if the South had won, would slavery still exist today, you think? I mean, obviously not. I mean,
from the very beginning of this nation, the Constitution is an anti-slavery document. From its very beginnings. That's why the 1619 Project is such an utterly horrid piece of scholarship, if you want to even, I call it scholarship in quotes, because there's nothing scholarly about it. It literally ignores the written record of the history. There were 27 reasons that the colonists gave as a reason of separation from Great Britain. Not one of them mentioned either slavery or that they were fearful that the British were going to abolish slavery in the colonies. Not one of the reasons. Not one of them. Yet these fools who wrote the 1619 Project try to maintain that the reason the colonists went to war was to keep the British from ending slavery. It's beyond belief.
Wow.
That's not the only thing. Hell, slavery didn't even exist in Jamestown when they brought the first slaves to Virginia. It didn't even exist. The first 20 slaves that were brought there to the colonies from an English pirate ship, the pirate ship had seized them from a Spanish slaver, dropped them off or traded them for some kind of goods. It was illegal to have slaves in Jamestown in 1619. It was illegal. The first time there was a court case that held that slavery was legal was when a black man, one of the original 20, who was freed after doing 7 years of indentured servitude, not slavery, but when he fulfilled his 7 years of indentured servitude and was set free, he sued. His name was Anthony Johnson. And he sued to keep a slave named Kasor as a slave, this black man. He sued to keep this black slave as a slave, and that was the first recorded case where the right to have an indentured servitude contract held in perpetuity was granted to an individual, a black man suing to the court for the right to keep this indentured servitude in perpetual slavery. Yeah. Look up the case of Anthony Johnson, the case he brought up in James. I believe he brought it up in 1628 or 1629, 1630, something like that.
So if they didn't address it in the Civil War, how long would it have gone to? Because the institution of slavery has proved to be a difficult issue for the Founding Fathers to navigate. They all had been born into a slaveholding society where the morality of owning slaves was rarely questioned. While some colonies were for slavery and others against it, the fact was that the institution had deep roots in the colonies. The majority of the signers of the Declaration of Independence and nearly half of the delegates to the Constitutional Convention owned slaves. Four of the first five presidents of the United States were slave owners. As the ideals of the Enlightenment began to spread throughout American colonies in the 1760s and 1770s, the articulation of the ideals of liberty and freedom began to take shape. How would it have been better? I mean, let me say, just to be blunt here. Would it have been better just after slavery was abolished just to say, hey, all the black people in the country, look, this is the way it's going to be in America. You can leave. We'll pay for your way, get you a ship or whatever. Everybody leave. Yeah, I mean, would that have solved the problem? No. Because what would happen? Because you have, you know, integrated societies all around the world now. I mean, I don't know. How would that have played out during World War II? What would have happened during World War I? You know, so what would have happened if Abraham Lincoln did send all the slaves back to Africa?
Well, you got to remember now, it was a sizable portion of black Americans who wanted just that. That's why they got the. That's why the nation of Liberia exists.
Yeah,
I mean, they wanted to go there and found a black nation. They, in fact, did. Monrovia, the capital of Liberia, was literally founded by American freed black slaves. I mean,
you know,
I believe the national language of Liberia is English.
Well, 5,000 African Americans fought on the side of the British. More than 25,000 sided with the British side during the conflict. So that means they believed in what the British were doing. So they didn't believe in American freedom as far as the majority goes. It says right here, though, it's estimated that nearly 10% of the Continental Army was African-American at one point. So that would only be, what, 1,000, you know, if that. I mean, you know, it wasn't
more
that large.
I believe the numbers.
So?
I believe the numbers. They had a couple of regiments I think a regiment back then was something like 400 men. They had several regiments of black soldiers. Many militia who fought in the Revolutionary War. In fact, because most of the militia, if they did have black troops, they had, you know, they were integrated in with the white troops in that particular period of time. Some of the regiments were largely black with white officers and white leadership.
You got to remember,
but
we call them slaves, right, Sarge?
There was a substantial number of blacks who fought in the I can get you the number because I just got a book on the Revolutionary War I was reading.
Yeah, but Sarge, we call them slaves, right? But We call them slaves, but actually the majority of the slaves actually lived pretty damn good. You know what I mean?
Well, wait a minute.
In fact,
many of those who fought for the revolution were not slaves. They weren't citizens in many cases, but they were free men. I guess that's the term they would use then. They were free men.
Yes, correct.
And they did fight on the revolutionary side. I mean, Salem Poor at Massachusetts, he killed the British major leading the charge at Bunker Hill.
Wow.
So I'm just saying,
don't
get wrong. I have many black. I mean, the reason that what's his name, Major, what's this guy, Major Putnam? I believe, no, Lord, what's this Lord's name? Dunmore. He offered freedom to people who were enslaved if they would agree to take up arms for the crown, and the British won. That's
okay,
why he
I got
as many
okay.
as he did, because he offered to give them outright freedom if they did. Most of those people who did were sent to Canada as part of the agreement in the Treaty of Paris. They were allowed to send them, expatriate them to Canada. That's why Canada got a significant population of black, of newly freed men.
Okay, I see. Well, it's an interesting subject. At least we're telling the truth here, though. You won't hear this in high schools out there around the country.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care what anybody says about my nation.
I got 213.
My country, as long as it's the truth, I don't care what you say. No, it ain't nothing you're going to tell me that's going to make me believe this isn't the greatest country in the history of mankind. There's not a damn thing you're going to tell me. Nothing. I know it's flawed. I know it's flawed. I've experienced its flaws. Like I said, I got it imprinted on my body with fists. But some of the best people I've ever known in my life were white people. Some of the people whom I benefited from my relations with them and helping to make me prosper were white people. So it's a mixed bag, like with anything else. You got good and you got bad with every group of human beings that has ever existed. And that's why you got to look at it.
Yeah, Sarge, I got 213. 213 wants to come on here, so I'll bring 213. Go ahead.
Hey, Sarge, thank you so much. And Joseph, thank you so much for you guys are dead on. I absolutely appreciate everything Sarge is saying. I believe that we do live in the greatest nation. Yes, horrible things and atrocities have taken place here in the United States, but that's with any country in the world. There's no other country as great as our country right now, and it's diverse. And Joseph, a quick question. How was it being a jailhouse rat?
Here we go. It's unreal. You know, he goes through all that spiel to ask us something stupid. Unreal, Sarge. You know, it's like they get you on the hook,
like
you know.
The first part of the call anyway.
Yeah, you know. It's unbelievable, you know. They just let me play something. You know, I should play something for them, but I don't have it up right now. But you know, it's just unbelievable. And you know, where you been, Randy? I recognize the voice. That's Randy from California. There, I think he's from California, but he's got to, ruin a good conversation. I just don't understand why. But go ahead, Sarge. I mean, I could bring him back on if he's got something interesting to say, because I know he's called in here before. I'll give him one more shot here. Go ahead, Randy.
Just wondering how it was being a jailhouse rat, and you keep telling people that you weren't an informant, but you said that you actually worked for the FBI. Is that correct?
No, I never worked for the FBI.
Who did you work for?
that's the privileged information. I said you signed disclosure agreement.
Oh, no,
so,
you were just
you know,
a jailhouse rat.
I don't want to get prosecuted,
Hey, Sarge, did you know about that? Did you know that this guy was actually just a jailhouse rat?
He knows all about my history.
And then he ended up getting stabbed.
I know that he served jail time. I don't know anything about him being a snitch. I know that he admitted readily that he had served time in jail.
Agreed. He did, but he was actually a well-known, and I'm not making this up, this is not trolling, he was absolutely a jailhouse snitch. When he got out, he then sued his parole officer, stating that the parole officer set him up to be stabbed because he ended up, believe it or not, Sarge, he tells people that he was the leader of the Latin Kings. Doesn't that sound crazy?
It's in the book. You must read my book a lot.
No, but it doesn't matter about the book. I mean, I could put anything
in
the book. I could say,
Well, hang on a second here. Let's tell the truth, though. There's actual government reports in the book, right? And newspaper reports and what happened there, right?
I don't believe that's true.
No, you don't believe it?
Okay. You think I read your book? You think
I don't know. Where are you getting this information from, then? Well, you just come out with it?
You. Come on, let's be totally.
Oh, so
and
you're
your
going
brother.
By me, why are you going to
argue with me? And your brother. Let's just talk about your brother. Has your brother...
Well,
your
we don't need to talk about anybody else.
Your
let's talk about the people that are here on the platform right now.
Well, is that you're talking about your sources. I have sources, you know, from your ex-wife, from your
mom, sources
from
are,
your dad.
Your sources are unreliable. That's what your sources are. If you're not
getting your family
why
members.
Wouldn't you get it from the source that's right here telling you that it's in black and white published on the Internet?
Because it's in black and white published.
Hang on, you're talking over me now. I gotta mute you. It's in black and white published on the Internet, okay? And you're only telling the bad parts of the story because you're trying to make me out to this be this crackhead or dope fiend that snitched on people, okay? Because you don't know what you're talking about. All right, this is in the early 1990s, and first of all, you got to go back and read the book. And there's actual government documents in the book, copyrighted, okay, that tells the entire story to back up my story because of assholes like this who like to twist it around and make it out to be something that it's not. So, and by the way, so I worked for the government. Yes, that's right. I survived two murder attempts, actually. The second one he just talked about where I was stabbed. Actually, they tried to shoot me in the head. The gun jammed. And they stabbed me in the chest in Meriden, Connecticut. I laid in State Street, Meriden, Connecticut, for about 20 minutes, actually. Almost died. And they set me up. They were trying to kill me. Richard Blumenthal, people like that, looked their name up. Very famous politicians. So had a lot of dirt on them. So we'll just leave it at that. But other than that, Randy, you take that and go run to your what's that gaming place there where they all the idiots, the perverts talk at? What the hell's the name of it? Oh, I forgot. It's that little Internet thing that they all go to. Oh, man. I don't know. But anyway, he's trying to bring my brother into the story. First of all, I haven't talked to him in over a year now. Before that, I haven't spoken to him in, maybe 17 years? So I think that would be kind of like a very unreliable source for firsthand information, if that's who you're going by. And it's not like he and I hang out and we, have family dinners together or anything. So he's not really a brother, I guess you could say. He lives his life, I live mine over here, and that's how it goes. But all right, what do you think about that, Sarge? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'd like to go back to answer a question. I told you I would get it because, I was going to answer your question earlier as to how many blacks served. And
there you go.
According to Thomas Fleming, considered a very one of the foremost historians of the Revolutionary War, in his book Liberty, which I got, I just pulled it off the shelf to look it up, refresh my memory, about 5,000 blacks, which did amount to close to 7 to 8% of the Revolutionary Army, served in the Continental Army.
Well, I said that, Sarge. I said about what, 10%?
But that's just in the Continental
5,000.
That's not counting the various militias, of which the count is less precise.
In the Continental Army,
you've got that many serving in the Continental Army under George Washington. Remember, the militias were under the command of their various militia officers. Okay?
Got you.
According to Fleming, there were 1,000 mostly Southern runaway slaves who fought for King George III in the Dunmore Regiment.
Yeah, they say 25,000, though, supported it. I've got another caller here with another number here.
That's more than fighting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But they openly supported, but they, so that they support, they didn't support liberty. But if this caller wants to stay on topic here, he can. If you're going to go off topic, I'm going to mute you real fast. So just 310, go ahead.
Sarge, can I ask you a question?
Oh, no, no. All right. He's spoofing his caller ID. Okay. You're off. You're off. You're out. You're out. You're out. Okay, you're out. All right. Spoofing his caller ID. Yeah. I believe that's – and also, you know, by you doing that, sir, you're committing a felony. Well, he's trying to expose me as working as an informant, you know, which he's trying to attack me and bring information out about me, and which that's a crime, you know. That is actual crime. So I'd be careful if I were you, Randy. So I'd be very, very careful. And you could look that up. Google that. Why don't you do some research on that? Say, is it against the law to expose somebody that worked for the government undercover? I bet you'd find out that it's a felony. So and a very serious crime. So I wouldn't do that if I were you. But there is a book published about most of the details about that particular story he's talking about. Anybody who wants to go look it up, go right ahead. Anyway, go ahead, Sarge. Back on cue here. Back on subject.
Hey, did you remember that, what's her name, Plume, Jessica Plume? What was her name? The CIA agent that, Cheney's chief of staff was reported to have outed, which is supposed to have been a violation of the law, and it turns out that she wasn't a field agent, and that's who the law was designed to protect. Remember that?
Yeah. Valerie Plume. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Valerie Plume, that was her name. Remember that?
Yes, I do, actually.
That was a big
controversy. If you go to the Attorney General's website in any state, you look it up for actual – these aren't prison snitches. These aren't people that just go tattletale like this guy's trying to talk about here. You look it up where if you're a certified or registered CI or if you're working undercover or employed, which I was, it's against the law to expose – or talk about that when you're told not to, actually, too. So you can look it up. But anyway, go ahead. Here they come in the chat room now. You know, here, John Connor. Who's that, I wonder? Oh, boy.
Hey,
I was
rebel,
so close, sorry, to freaking
Connor
having a wall busted,
remember? Sarah Connor.
All
Sarah
of them, rounded up.
It was Sarah Connor,
oh,
sorry. He was a rebel fighting the Skynet.
Yeah. You know, here he goes. Let's talk about Peter Paul. Why do we want to talk about people and attack people? This is what's wrong with America today. This is the prime example right here. You know, and it really is. I got another caller here, 916. Let's see. If you spoofed your caller ID, Randy, you're getting kicked off. So hang on. Go ahead, Randy, or
Peter
whoever
Paul
it is, 916.
And that's his buddy.
Here we go. All right. Yep. Spoofing his caller ID, so I don't know if it's a legit caller or not. And this is what they do, you know. I mean, this it's like, don't they have anything better to – am I that important to you that you have to – I mean, this is important to them. Wow. I mean, I'm flattered in a way.
By the way,
you know?
Hey, Joe, I got a really hot topic for you that Human Events, the online magazine, has just leaked. They have leaked a State Department memo that indicates official support for the State Department for the Black Lives Matter agenda. Have you seen that?
Really?
Yeah.
I have not seen that.
According to Human Events, they've got a source that shared a document that's purported to come from the U.S. State Department. It's on State Department, got all the State Department headings and everything. And it says that all United States diplomatic and consular posts are being encouraged to display shows of support Black Lives Matter on Tuesday, May 25th, the one-year anniversary of George Floyd's death. The memo reads in part, and I quote, "The department supports the use of the term Black Lives Matter in messaging content, speeches, and other diplomatic engagements with foreign audiences to advance racial equity and access to justice on May 25th and beyond. We encourage posts to focus on the need to eliminate systemic racism and its continued impact."
Wow, yeah, wow, that's interesting. Yeah, because when is the exact anniversary of this Floyd thing, actually? What day did this happen? I know it happened.
Tomorrow.
Huh? Tomorrow? Really? Wow.
Yeah, last year.
Wow, well, they got protests going around the country or what? I haven't heard nothing about it.
There's
going
to be at least commemorations of this event, which they are using as an excuse to literally change the United States, along with other things, but this is one of the more important of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so
well,
I'm sure there will be.
I mean, well, it's an important day tomorrow. I mean, look, the police officer that did, I mean, what do you, I mean, I don't think I've ever asked you what your real whole entire opinion was on the George Floyd. I know
okay,
what happened
well,
afterwards
first,
is a bunch
you,
of
at
crack
first,
of crap.
I was convinced that he did nothing illegal, even if he was, shall we say, ill-advised and imprudent. But after hearing the evidence in court, I had to conclude that he's probably guilty of involuntary manslaughter, but not murder. After I saw that, so I did change my mind on it. I said, okay, he's guilty of involuntary manslaughter, but not murder. Murder, I think, was just, they're just trying to appease the mob out there. They didn't give him a fair trial, that's for sure. That I have no doubt whatsoever.
I know, right?
He did not get everything they're supposed to do to ensure a fair trial. Free of intimidation and extortion and all the rest of it. But, yeah, I'm convinced that he should have...
Now, here they go. They're in the chat room.
let's get over to the Carl Marx day. Yeah.
I kind of agree. You know, how about George Floyd Square, huh? You know, I mean, that is the most crime-riddled square block area in Minnesota. That's like, I mean, if you wander into that place, there's like total mayhem. The police don't even patrol there. Is it still that bad to this day?
I don't know, Joe, but I'm telling you, I'm thinking about, as far as I'm concerned, the two biggest terrorist organizations in the United States today are Antifa and Black Lives Matter, and you've got the State Department evincing support for one of these two organizations. I think that is incredibly disturbing.
Yeah.
And simultaneously with this, while we got this utterly trumped up charge of insurrection at the Capitol that these Democrats are trying to use, I guess, to get their own version of the Enabling Act, in which, you know, Adolf Hitler was able to combine the offices of Reich's Chancellor and Reich's President into one office, so he becomes Supreme Leader. Sounds to me like they're trying to use this insurrection thing as their own version to seize power here in the United States.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, they're elevating beyond all significance. Every day I go to the Department of Justice website to see if anybody's going to be charged with insurrection and or sedition. Not one person yet. They're all charged with various forms of trespass, all of them, and they're holding them literally for trespass, and all of them are being held without bail.
Is the Eighth Amendment violation? Where is the Eighth Amendment? Where is the due process violation?
I don't know. Where's the ACLU? They ain't got a goddamn thing to say about it.
Yeah, he left the chat room pretty quick, that clown, huh?
I never seen anything like what's going on here with this thing, with this attempt to turn what happened on January 6th.
I know. Yeah, it's. I mean, they have destruction of property, right? Is federal property a separate charge? I'm not sure about that.
Charges against these aren't even destroyed. There's some of it, yes, is there, but that's very few of the people. Most of them are being charged with trespass, and trespass in an unauthorized area, and some form of disorderly conduct. That's it. I've looked at every single person being charged, and there's 425 of them at the last count I saw. Well, I looked at every single charge sheet.
What's the most serious charge?
Okay, I'm looking at the charge sheet right now. The United States Attorney's Office, District of Columbia, they got the case numbers, they got every single name in alphabetical order of every single person they've arrested. Here is a typical charge against a typical person. Christopher Michael Alberts. Russell Alford Dean. Knowingly entering or remaining in any restricted building or grounds without lawful authority. Disorderly and disruptive conduct in a restricted building or grounds. Disorderly conduct in a Capitol building. Parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building. This is typical of the charges of most of these people, trespass of some kind and disorderly conduct. There's not a damn thing in any of these charges about sedition and or insurrection. Not a thing.
There's nothing for sedition? There's nothing for sedition?
Not
nothing at all, not
person.
One charge?
Listen to me, Joe. Not one person has been charged with sedition or insurrection. Not one. 425 people. Not one.
I got a legitimate caller here. I recognize the number. I know they didn't spoof this one. Go ahead there.
This is Meredith, Connecticut. I just want to jump in here. I'm agreeing with Sergeant just about everything he has to say, but he mentioned before about the largest terrorist organizations, and I disagreed with that because the largest terrorist organization is our own U.S. government. That's the largest organization around. And what he's saying is right about all those charges, but where is the investigation of that woman being shot? They don't even want to talk about it.
It's non-existent. People are trying to get an answer. All we're trying to get right now, I swear to God, we are asking the Capitol Hill Police Department to provide the legal rationale for one of their officers, so they claim, killing an American citizen. That's all we're asking right now. Why did your officer kill her? What is the official explanation for her death at his hands? And I'd still like to know who it is so we can determine if, in fact, it is actually a Capitol Hill policeman. I'm beginning to think it might be a congressional aide of some kind who was armed and elected to shoot that woman on his own authority.
And they're also playing coy. They're not going to let you go down that rabbit hole. They wouldn't say shit if they had a mouthful.
Well, here's the thing,
but they
man.
Knew
here's
there was
what
a protest
doing.
Coming.
They got a legal out as to why they don't have to tell us. Congress, Capitol Hill Police work for Congress. They literally work for the Congress, and, you know, the House of Representatives and Congress. Nancy Pelosi and the Congress.
Oh, wait a minute.
I thought they worked for us. They're not bound by the Freedom of Information Act. They don't have to release or respond to an FOIA request.
They don't work for us.
So that's why they're able to get away with this right now. I still think the courts can make them reveal the name of this officer, which we need to know. They demand accountability for the police and everything
else. According to,
but with this, they don't have to tell us even the most basic of information.
Go back to what I said. Our largest criminal organization is the U.S. government, because the United States copyright law says that anything that the government makes is in the public domain. So any information they have is in the public domain, but yet they still won't give it to you.
This issue needs to be forced. They killed an American citizen, and they have absolutely no accountability for their reason for killing her. Notice I haven't used the word murder yet,
family?
Even though I'm
what
beginning
about the family
to suspect
of this
that's what it was.
Woman? What about the family of this woman? Have they spoken out yet?
They're trying to sue. They're suing to get the information. They're in court.
Oh, Lord.
They've got to sue just to get an explanation.
Have they been interviewed yet?
Yeah, they'll get in a car accident or something. They'll get rid of them.
Well, they're going to have to get rid of the whole family's lined up.
Yeah, I don't think the family would get whacked, but not on something of a small scale like that. But I think they'd be harassed, their credit cards shut off, their bank accounts overdrafted, stuff like that. They'll be harassed, you know.
Well, it's not a small scale, because they knew in November that this was going to happen. So it's not a small scale. It was all a put up deal.
Well, I said it on my radio show on December 18th. Remember, I said a big event is coming. I knew the day. I knew. There was emails going out for everybody to go to the Capitol on January 6th. There was, you know what I mean? Everybody was summoned to go there. Certain people were. They wanted 500,000 people there. They knew what they were going to plan on doing if they didn't get the Pence to do what they wanted them to do. So they knew. I stayed away, of course. I wasn't there. But I'm just saying, you know, it's like everyone knew. So why'd they have so few Capitol police officers?
Because they can't impeach Trump again, so he'll get them another way.
Yeah. I mean,
I think this is one of the worst episodes of lack of accountability of any police agency that I have ever seen in my life, for such a public killing. One of the most public killings by police officers in the history of the United States, and there's utterly no accountability for it. It's beyond belief
what
we're looking at with regard to the killing of this woman.
I know. It's insane. What if she was a black woman?
It is.
Would it be different, you think?
Oh, I know it would be. But remember, she was just a deplorable man. She was a Trump supporter. Her life wasn't worth nothing as far as these people are concerned.
What do you think is going to happen? What's Trump going to do, in your opinion, Sarge? You think Trump's going to come out and run again or what?
I think the odds are better than even that he will, but I don't think it's a guarantee. I think, look, that man's got an ego in a good way. He's got a good ego. He didn't like the way he lost this election. He doesn't think he lost it fair and square. He thinks a man is wholly unsuited, unsuitable, and incompetent for the job, and in fact destructive to the job, which I agree with completely, usurped his rightful election. And given the fact that he is a positive egoist, I just don't think he's going to let that lie. I think he's more likely than not going to run.
Really? Well,
yeah.
Interesting. I mean, Donald
Trump
know
really has a good. Yeah. He's one of the best examples I know of a person who's an egoist in a positive way. He is ego-driven in much of what he does, and much
of
what
he does. That's why I think he will run.
For the most part, what is best for the American people and the United States nation. I didn't say in everything. I said for the most part.
Well, hey, did you hear about this one? Supreme Court 6-3 takes up historic case. Democrats just went way over the line. This threat they're talking about. This breaking news here that just happened. It says Democrats after 6-3, Supreme Court takes up case. Democrats quickly threaten to go ahead and pack the court. Now, and they're talking about Democrats panicking. What else is new? Even with a slim majority in Congress and their puppet in the White House, Democrats still have a major weak spot in their socialist agenda, the Supreme Court. Trump left the court in good situation with a 6-3 conservative majority. That means Democrats can't ram their agenda through the courts and get away with it. But they are even more nervous now that Trump Supreme Court just took up a major case, and as they grow desperate, Democrats make more threats. Democratic senators say if the Supreme Court strikes a blow against Roe v. Wade by upholding a Mississippi abortion law, it will fuel an effort to add justices to the court or otherwise reform it. The Supreme Court's conservative majority this week agreed to hear the Mississippi case, which could dramatically narrow abortion rights by allowing states to make it illegal to get an abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Now, they also ruled, the Supreme Court on Monday, Sarge, about the Fourth Amendment, where cops cannot go in and search houses now without a warrant. Did you hear about that one?
Did they eliminate the exigent circumstances exception?
Yes, that's what they did. You didn't hear about
that?
They did? Yes, they did.
I did not hear this at all. I did not know.
Yeah, look it up. Yeah, they shot it down. That came out in 1973, that rule there, where so they shot it down. I forgot the name of the case. I'm trying to find it now, but yeah, they shot it down. The Fourth Amendment is solid now.
When I was
now,
a police
rock,
officer,
I mean,
when we talk about the Fourth Amendment, they cited the exigent circumstances that you could go into a home without a warrant. They were hot pursuit. They were circumstances that would cause you to believe that a crime was being committed against a person, and unless you entered the dwelling or the home, and immediately someone was in imminent danger of death or serious bodily harm.
Exactly. And they shot it down trying to find the case.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Oh, well, here it is. No, let's see. In blue states, take a look. I'm trying to find it. I read it today, actually, where they shot it. Yeah, they shot it. Why don't you agree with that, Sarge?
There was a case. There was a case in Calumet City, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago, where two Calumet police officers were being told by a woman who was the mother of a victim inside the house who was screaming she was being raped. In fact, she was. And the officers told they couldn't go in the house without a warrant. And as a result of that case, there were some changes in Illinois law to assure that it was clear to police officers that they can enter a home if they had legitimate exigent circumstances of going home because someone's life or safety was in peril. This girl, this 16-year-old girl, was raped while these officers stood outside, and they could hear her screaming through the door.
There should be something outlined in the language.
That I was always thought was an exception to the warrant requirement to go into a home.
Well, according to what I was told by the sheriffs in my state here is that they could hear people screaming. Okay, inside the house, and they cannot enter that house unless the owner of the house lets them in, or they cannot go in based upon a witness testimony or what they hear.
That might be a state requirement, but it had never been a requirement under the federal for this. The state can always impose more restrictions on the police. There's nothing unconstitutional about the state saying we're going to have our police operate under more restrictions than the federal or the Supreme Court says that they can operate under. But I'm just saying that what the federal court ruled, the Supreme Court ruled, was that exigent circumstances are allowed in certain narrowly tailored circumstances.
Wow. Well, I mean, like I said, they shot it down. You look it up. I know they're not talking about it very much, too much.
I don't know if I like that. I think police ought to be able to go in a case like what happened in Calumet City, because everybody I know, all the citizens, roundly condemn the Calumet Police Department for not breaking down the door and going in and try to rescue that girl. Because, I mean, you know,
well,
I mean, it's not an unreasonable assumption to think she's being raped and she's screaming and the mother's telling you that's what the guy's in there doing or trying to do. If they're
wrong, okay.
But I'm saying, but it's not like they just made it up out of thin air.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, there has well, how about common law? Back to common sense. You know, some sort of common sense. I mean, it's just insane. I mean, election scandal erupts in blue state. Looks like Republicans are being cheated out of votes, and they, you know, it looks like another voting machine malfunction. They're talking about, here it is, right here, Sarge, here it is, right here. I got it right here. Historic Supreme Court decision. Supreme Court delivers 9-0 ruling. They all voted for this, Sarge. Ruling on the Constitution, Americans' Fourth Amendment rights just got protected. It says right here, the Constitution has been in the spotlight for years now, and debates surrounding certain amendments continue to rage. And ever since Joe Biden took office, the Republicans and conservatives have been concerned about protecting the Constitution. Thankfully, they just got a big win from the Supreme Court. While the First and Second Amendment get the most attention, there are other important rights we cannot forget about. One is the Fourth Amendment, which was the focus of the latest high court decision. And in the case, the Supreme Court sided unanimously with the Constitution and upheld a significant citizen's right. It says the United States Supreme Court unanimously ruled Monday that a so-called exception to the Fourth Amendment called community caretaking does not permit police officers to enter, search your home without first obtaining a search warrant, even if doing so may be in the public interest. Like you said, Sarge. Yeah. And so they ruled against it. They said there's no more. In short, this means the law enforcement can't violate your home without first obtaining necessary permission, and that's a big deal. The case was Cangelia versus Strom, and it involved a Rhode Island man who claimed his house was searched by officers without a warrant. And the original case, Sarge, where this first kicked in was 1973. It was Caddy versus Dombrowski. That's when they first implemented it. So we survived before 73's charge. Why should we not,
reverse
it now?
Read that ruling in its entirety, because I think it's very important. I think it's one of the ones I definitely want to read in its entirety. I don't think that saying public interest is not the same thing as an exigent circumstance involving an imminent threat to life. I don't think it invalidated that, but I have to read the ruling to make that determination.
Okay.
Public interest is something okay, there's a vague future possibility of harm if you don't stop somebody now, like you don't take away their guns. You know?
Okay.
He's got guns.
Yeah.
He's mentally unstable.
Well, that's what this
He's
got to
go in there.
Starts.
He's got to get guns out before he does something. That's not the same thing as an imminent threat to life and physical harm. I don't think it would invalidate that. I really don't. But
I'll tell you right now. It says right here, it says the law enforcement can't conduct a search and seizure operations without a warrant. The court decided that the community caretaking option doesn't apply to private residents. Okay.
Yeah, you said caretaking. I don't think that would apply to the circumstance I spoke about.
Using
that word is something
they're going after.
Yeah, I don't think it would invalidate that particular exigent circumstance.
Go ahead, Connecticut. What'd you say?
You just said they can't go after search and seizure, and that's not what they would be going after at that point.
They're going in there to save
a life. They're not going there to search the premises.
That's right.
Yeah,
if you're going there to save a life, you save the life, the imminent threat to life is over, and you want to search the house, you got to go back out of the house, then get a warrant to go in and search the house. See, the idea of an exigent circumstance is merely to save life, not to have a pretext to search the house.
And that's what this – actually, it does talk about this, Sarge. I'm not going to read it all. It does, where they went in because they had a call there, and then they went in and they found two guns, and they confiscated the guy's guns. So that's what they, you know what I mean? And they're saying,
yeah,
no, they can't
That's what I think. Yeah, I agree with that. I don't have a problem with that part. I would have a problem if they eliminate the exigent circumstance in preservation of life. Yeah, I would have a real problem. I don't think they meant to do that. I don't think they did do that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if a cop's standing at the door and somebody's screaming for help, you know, and the person comes out, and we need help inside here. I mean, clearly your Fourth Amendment isn't protected then. I mean, come on. I mean, we got to use common sense.
I don't think it's
going to
do that. I really don't. But,
yeah,
but even even if you do go into a house under exigent circumstances, the only thing you're allowed to search under that exigent circumstance is the area within arm's reach of the suspect when you get him. Then after you get him, you can search the area in arm's reach. Then you got to take him out of the house, apply to a judge for a warrant, now go in there to search the house. Still got to get the warrant
there
anyway
you
if you really want to do a meaningful search of the house.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're about ready to wrap it up. We're in overtime. They're going to cut me off here any second. Any final thoughts, guys, you want to mention here real quick? I mean, obviously we had a couple trolls here call in at the end and attack me. I guess they're running out of material. So instead of going after Trump or everybody else, they or the NSM, they're going to come after me now. So, but anything you want to say here real quick, Connecticut?
Yeah, real quickly, and then maybe Sarge wants to comment on it. You know, after many decades of listening to these fools in Washington and their nonsense laws and the nonsense things they do, it's nice to pay attention and research what they say. But I always wonder, what do they really have in mind? When they have something going forward like this, what is their real goal? Because that's what it's all about, what their real goal is. And their real goal may not come for 10 years down the road. That's it.
All right. Go ahead, Sarge.
I got to agree with the gentleman there. I mean, every single thing these progressives, liberals, Marxists, Democrats want to do, and I mean everything they're doing these days, is to aggrandize and increase and centralize power. Nothing more, nothing less. More control over us and less individual liberties as envisioned in the original framing of the Constitution in this country. Everything they do is aimed to that end and to help globalist interests.
Sarge, did you read The Republic yet? Did you go to there and read that document
yet?
Yes,
I'm halfway through it. I'll let you know about it when I get through finish. I get through reading.
See, that's what I like about Sarge. He gets all the facts together first, then comments on it. He's not like these other people that comment knee-jerk. They knee-jerk. And we need less knee-jerk reaction. Sarge is somebody that I would stand toe-to-toe with and fight. I'd fight not against him, but with him, against the powers to be that are in this country. I'll tell you what, I would be more than happy to stand beside that Sarge and fight with him, like I said. I mean, obviously that's common sense. Obviously he's a good man and respects our country, loves his country. And I like what you said on the NSM that night. You said, I would die for my country and my Constitution. And that was very important. And nobody knew what to say when you said that. So,
I got proof. I almost did. I got a DD-214 that shows two purple hearts. I almost did. So, I mean, I don't have to prove anything to anybody anymore.
You don't have to prove
anything. I already
know
I will.
Yeah.
I love this country. I didn't say it was perfect. It ain't never going to be perfect. I don't expect it to be perfect. It's just the best. And I'm not going to find, I find it highly unlikely that I'm going to find any other country that's going to be better. Highly unlikely. It's possible, but I doubt it. And I'll tell you, I'm glad to know that you'd be willing to fight with me. I'm telling you right now, man.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever differences we might have are minuscule compared to our realization of the threat we are facing from all these forces that hate this country and want to radically transform it.
I know. It's too bad the younger people don't see it, and even a lot of the older people. It's too bad that they're out there, you know, we're too busy attacking each other, going against each other, instead of working together for one common goal. Like I always say, if we freaking work for that common goal and achieve it, everything else will fall into place. You'll get what you want in the end without hesitation, you know, and without retribution. You'll get what you want, you know, because everything, all the pecking order will fall into place naturally. Nobody has to put anybody in a certain spot. Nobody has to segregate anybody. Nobody has to force anybody. Nobody has to hate anybody. You'll get what you want in the end, you know, and that's what it's all about. We all just want to be free, you know, and have life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, except we allow hate to get involved and ignorance also, you know. So, but Sarge, thanks for joining me. Next show, I hope you tune in and contribute. Also, I'll try to promote it before so everyone gets some notice. But I guess good night, everybody. Take care. God bless the Republic.